Here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Michael Eisen.
Good morning, everybody. Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk and Michael Eisen with you. And Mike, it's still a very happy place here in East Rutherford, New Jersey, 2 days after the Giants' victory in Philadelphia, ruining the Philadelphia Eagles' home opener. And everyone's still smiling. It's great to see.
Well, as they should be smiling, it was a big win. The Giants, they like to say that they don't really pay attention to what's going on in the media, but they're certainly well aware of how lightly regarded their chances were going into the game. And, to come away with a big win on, any road victory in the division is huge. And, to stop a long losing streak against one of your fiercest rivals, it was just a good day all around.
And really, it was a game where everybody on the team had a part of the victory. Eli made plays. The defense made plays. The line made plays. The secondary made plays. Everybody had their hand in this win.
Well, that's you sound like Tom Coughlin preaching the importance of team. But, yes, you never win a game with just one or two guys contributing. Everyone had a hand, offense, defense, special teams. It was just a great team win.
All right, everybody, we are taking your calls as usual on Giants.com at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. We're also taking your questions on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. All right, Mike, a couple housekeeping things from yesterday. Obviously, head coach Tom Coughlin addressed the media, as did the Giants players. First, let's start Mario Manningham. He seems to think that he's good to go when he passed his concussion test. Last we heard from Coach Coughlin, he's not 100% sure.
No, from what I've heard, he's having a test today, and obviously Mario is very confident he's going to pass that test. He feels a lot better, but when he spoke yesterday, he has not been officially cleared to play, which Coach Coughlin said, as Coach said, until I get the document in my hand for the medical people that says he can play, then he's not playing. But Mario says he feels much better. He got a chance to rest. So, obviously, Mario Manningham expects he's going to have the test today and be cleared to practice tomorrow.
And you really can't blame Coach either. The way this preseason has gone with these injuries, guys walk off the field with a minor tweak of the knee. It turns out to be a torn ACL. I wouldn't believe he's ready to go until I saw the paper either.
Yeah, oh, well, there's nothing to blame Coach about. I mean, the medical people have not come to him and said Mario Manningham is ready to go. And until then, he's not going to declare Mario Manningham ready to go.
Of course. And it looks like OC might be inching a little bit closer to coming back. He ran yesterday. But he has done activity before. It's all a matter of how that knee reacts today, whether or not it swells up.
Yeah, and I'm sure, the activity he's doing now is going to be, I think, different from when he actually gets out in the field and you start doing some football stuff and, the cutting and moving forward against the blocker and how it's going to recover. So OC appears to be inching toward getting there, but I don't sense that he's there yet, although maybe he will play on Sunday. I don't know.
And, it's funny, Mike. By the way, we are taking your calls at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. And, taking a look at that game against the Eagles, we were talking about OC. Let's start with the defense. They got pressure on Vic. They beat Vic up and they hit him. But it wasn't because they blitzed a lot. I thought the front four did an excellent job getting there on normal pass rush situations.
Oh, they did. Absolutely. Vic seemed to have somebody around him and keeping him in the pocket most of the time. He's going to escape every once in a while, but the Giants did a good job of kind of funneling him, the ends outside funneling him into the middle, and then you saw the tackles hit him like the Chris Canty hit that Vic's been whining about since the game. Jason Pierre-Paul, he's tied for the NFL lead in sacks. He's incredible, this kid. And, he was in Vic's face a lot. So the pass rush, as we said going in, was going to be a big key, and it really turned out to be a big key.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to bring up Jason Pierre-Paul next, Mike, and we all knew what an athlete he was coming out of school, but he didn't have a lot of football experience. And, frankly, he's ahead of the learning curve, in my opinion. I didn't think he was going to be this good this soon.
Well, he really didn't have much football experience when he arrived here. And he kind of started to get it, as they say, late in the year. He had 4.5 sacks, the last 6 weeks of the season. That was his season total. He already has 4.5 sacks this year. He's already matched his rookie total. We're only 3 games in, and he's really a force to be reckoned with. And, you go back to OC, the way Jason Pierre-Paul's playing, I mean, obviously you love to have Osi back, and when Osi comes back, what a tremendous defensive line that'll be. But you don't need to rush him back until he's 100% or as close to 100% as he's going to get, because Jason Pierre-Paul's playing so well.
Now, I guess when eventually Osi does get back and he becomes 100% in third and fourth down packages, second along, whatever you're going to look at, you'll see Pierre-Paul probably move inside the tackle with Tuck, and you'll see Osi and probably Kiwanuka, I guess, at the ends, right?
You know, I think you're going to see all different kinds of combinations once OC comes back.
It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it really is. I'm sure that Pierre-Paul will be on the inside sometime. But, you know, he's playing so well on the outside. He's still young. He's still relatively inexperienced. I don't know that they're going to ask him to do a whole lot of different things when OC comes back, only because he really is excelling in what he's doing now, and you don't want to take him out of his comfort zone. So I'm sure Perry Fuel's going to find roles for all those guys.
Let's slowly shift back to the linebackers. That you see Greg Jones on the field a whole lot on Sunday, mostly because the Giants were nickel, because the Eagles usually go three or four wide receivers. But the one rookie linebacker that was on the field a lot, and Tom Coughlin was just effusive in his praise of them yesterday. I've never seen him praise a rookie this much. Usually he likes to try to keep those guys very level. Don't get them too cocky and confident. But, wow, he had nothing but great things to say about Jaquan Williams.
Well, it's hard not to. The kid had 9 unassisted tackles. I mean, he was all over the place. You know, he, in a lot of ways, is similar to Jason Pierre-Paul. They come from the same school. They both played at 2 junior colleges prior to going to South Florida. Not a whole lot of experience, but extremely athletic. And Jaquan Williams has really gotten it very quickly. And he that was basically the defense all day against Philadelphia. They had Deion Grant in there and Jaquan Williams, and Perry Fuel said Thursday of last week, we have a plan to slow down their speed, and that was their plan, was basically to put Jaquan Williams out there, who's got tremendous speed himself, and Deion Grant.
And Ed in Massachusetts wants to talk about Jaquan Williams and Greg Jones. Ed, what's going on, pal?
Yes, he seems to be able to get to the quarterback, and I was wondering about Greg Jones. He didn't play that much.
Well, that was the plan, as we just mentioned. When you play the Eagles, you got to combat their speed, and Greg Jones is more of a plugger in the middle of the line, so they took him out. They played Deion Grant most of the game. They played Jaquan Williams a lot to get more speed on the field, and it worked. I mean, the Eagles really could not function as they had in their previous games. You know, it's all according to, you know, the game plan for that week, and, you know, if we face a running team, you'll see more of Greg Jones.
And it's funny, Mike, all we got on these shows, and you know, the last 2 weeks, after the Washington game and after the Rams game, the Giants are playing all these zone coverages. They can't cover anybody in zone. Their zone's terrible. And what did we see? Probably more than in any other game so far this year against the Eagles. We saw zone defense, but zone defense played well, and that's the difference. They executed perfectly.
Well, I think Deion Grant being out there so much had a lot to do with that. You're talking about a 12-year veteran who's played, you know, 160-something games in the NFL. There's not much that he has not seen that's going to surprise him. So I thought that, you know, his presence out there, nothing against Greg Jones, but you're talking about a guy who's played 3 games and a guy who's played 165 games, and I think the experience really showed the other day.
And obviously there's a sacrifice there, and you saw LeSean McCoy run the ball well and run it pretty consistently because you don't have those linebackers on the field. But against a big play offense like the Eagles, I think that was part of the strategy. You want to bend but don't break, make them sustain drives, and don't allow the big play.
Yeah, LeSean McCoy's longest run was 21 yards. So, and that's exactly what they did. I mean, if you're going to give the ball to LeSean McCoy, you know, whatever he got at 20-something, I don't have the stat sheet in front of me, he's going to get his yards. He's a great back. But if you limit him to nothing more than a 21-yard run and a lot of short runs, you're doing your job.
And in the secondary, Aaron Ross had a bit of a redemption game. The first one was obviously a little bit of good fortune, the ball going off Steve Smith's hands. And it's funny, Bob Pop and I, Mike, were talking on Friday, and we were just talking about this game and, like, the worst stuff that could happen on the first drive. And we're sitting there. You know one of the worst things that could happen for a Giant fan? If on the Eagles' first drive, they're in the red zone on a 3rd and 6, and Steve Smith's open, he catches a first down, and it sets up a touchdown. And they were one, like, Steve Smith grab away from that happening. Your Giant fan's going berserk all across America. But it bounces off his hands right to Aaron Ross, and that really was kind of the start of a pretty good day for the Giants' corners.
Yeah, and Steve Smith really wasn't open. He was covered. You know, I'm not really sure why Michael Vick threw it to him.
And he fired it to him, too. There was no touch on that pass.
No. So, yeah, that was a huge play. You know, Aaron Ross did come up big with the two picks the week after he was temporarily benched. You know, but just shows that's the mentality you have to have as a cornerback. You just can't get down. If you have a bad game or a bad play, you just move on to the next player game.
And stay with that secondary. We got a question coming in on Twitter from, I'm going to butcher this name, Michael Patazak. That probably isn't right, but I'll go with it anyway. When do you expect Prince Amukamara to be ready to practice, Mike?
Well, I've seen him out there after practices doing some individual drills. It looks like he's going to he is progressing, certainly. He looked like he was running a little bit the other day. You know, Saturday is October 1st.
Probably not this week, right?
No, I don't think this week. But I would hope certainly by mid-October he'll be out there, you know, doing football work in practice. And you know, hopefully maybe by the end of the month, you know, after the bye, he'll be back.
Now, do you think the Giants should have put him on that PUP list in retrospect? I mean, did they thought he could have got back quicker? Because it's probably going to be 6 weeks, right?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, a guy like that, especially when you're short at the position, you know, once Terrell Thomas went down, I think you want to do everything you can to get Prince Amukamara back, even if he's back, you know, 1 week earlier than the 6 week
period. Fair.
And you know, he is working toward that. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when he does return, because he has literally spent no time on the practice field with the Giants. And yet he's sort of being looked at as a contributor once he does finally step on the field. But everything I've heard, he's an extremely talented player who, once he gets some practice time, is going to help.
Unfortunately, with a broken foot, it's really impossible to stay in shape. How are you going to keep your cardio and your wind good when you can't put any pressure on your foot and you can't run?
Well, they have those arm machines, and you build up your wind using your arms. It's like a bicycle. Instead of, you use your arms instead of your feet. But yeah, it's
oh, like one of those cross-country skiing deals. One of those deals.
Yeah, and you know, look, they're not going to when he comes back, they're not going to ask him to play, you know, 55 plays the first few weeks. They're going to let him ease into it and get used to and get in shape.
I should ask you about a guy that is on the PUP list, Ramsey's Barn. I saw him hustling down the hallway to lunch the other day, and we've gotten a couple phone calls, Mike. I should ask you, what have you heard about his progress? Do you think he'll be ready to play when he comes off the PUP list in a couple of weeks?
You know, I've heard he's making progress, but you always hear he's making progress.
We've heard that for a long time,
yeah.
Haven't we?
You know, he's certainly eager to play, and, you know, my sense is whenever the 6 weeks is up, they'll put him on the practice field, and they'll see if he's ready to go. I mean, it was a very serious injury, but, you know, I know they'd love to get him out there and have that tall target out there.
And we got this tweet coming in from Tony, and Mike, he might be comfortable with this. I don't think Coach Coughlin or the front office would be. I'd be comfortable if the Giants go 4-12, so long as those four wins come against the Eagles and the Cowboys.
you stand alone with in those thoughts. 4-12 is unacceptable to everybody around here.
As great as it would be to sweep those two teams, 4-12 is a
is a miserable season.
It would not be fun to be here in November and December if it was 4-12.
You don't want to live with Tom Coughlin if it was that kind of year.
No, but, he would not.
Yeah, no, I very much disagree with that.
201-939-4-5.
We can beat the Eagles and the Cowboys twice and go 10-4 and be a hell of a lot happier.
And it's funny, we were talking about this, Mike. People are very disappointed with that opening week loss against the Redskins, but you almost buy that game back winning in Philadelphia, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now, you know, people before the game like to go through the games. That's a win, that's a loss, that's a win. But obviously people are probably a little bit more less confident about winning in Philadelphia than winning in Washington. So that's almost a trade-off. They're both division games. You didn't want to start the year 0-2 in the division, obviously. Now you split them, and you're in pretty decent shape moving forward, tied for first place NFC East.
Yeah, I looked it up before the Philly game because I guess I was a little pessimistic, but the Giants have not started 0-2 in a division since 1996. So it's very rare that, obviously, that they come out and don't play well in the division consistently. So, you know, and just – what you just said about, you know, people look at the schedule and say this should be a win, this should be a loss. I don't want to show how old I am, but I learned from Bill Parcells a long time ago, there is nothing dumber in football than that. Really.
It's true.
There really isn't.
It's true.
You know, you cannot tell anybody now what the circumstances are going to be on November 6th when we go to New England. Who's going to be hot? Who's going to be hurt?
Brady might not even be playing for all we know.
Yeah. You can't. You have no idea what the under what circumstances any of these future games are going to be played. That's why Parcells always said, you worry about this week, you worry about next week, Because when we play next week, it could be under an entirely different set of circumstances.
201-939-4513. Let's go up to Vin up in the Bronx. Vin, what's going on, pal? Vinny.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what situation like with the OC Manure. I know Tucker's a little bit under the weather with that neck. If he plays, you know, we could fill that void a little bit. And my other question is, I actually have a comment. It feels so good to finally beat the Eagles, man. It's unbelievable. It was a very emotional victory for us. So I just want to give a kudos to the G-Man, you know, pulling it through.
No, I appreciate it, Vin, man. No problem.
Very emotional for us, too. John still has a champagne-soaked shirt on.
Why would I take it off?
Yeah, but OC, as we mentioned earlier, OC, I guess, is getting closer to practice. I guess hopefully he will practice this week. We don't know that until tomorrow. And, you know, obviously best-case scenario, he plays in Arizona Sunday, but we're really not going to know that until – today's kind of an off day for the players. It's game plan day, and we really won't get any injury updates until tomorrow.
All right, Vin, appreciate the call, man. Thanks a lot. 201-939-4513. Stick on the phones. Bruce in Virginia. Bruce, what's going on?
Hey, hi, guys. Enjoy your show.
Thanks.
Just one quick comment I wanted to – kudos to the tackles, Will Beatty and Mac played a great game, I thought. And then Tolleson hit Vic, rushed the pass, and then he got the block afterwards. I thought that was great. I'm still shocked that we still have Tom Flynn as the special teams coach. I just can't believe it. I wanted you to comment on it. Thanks a lot, and thanks for your show.
Appreciate it, man. No problem.
Well, it's Tom Quinn, not Flynn. Tom Quinn, I know that he comes under fire. A lot of what that is what stems from last year. You have to remember he was working with a rookie punter last year. You know, obviously we were 31st in punt and kickoff returns last year, but you got to look at what he was working with. I mean, we had Darius Rainout and Will Blackman back there most of the year. Neither of those guys, quite frankly, are going to the Hall of Fame. This year, he was expected to have...
They got my vote, Mike.
Yeah. he was... And that's why John is where he is.
Precisely.
He was expected, to have Hixon. He doesn't have Hixon. Aaron Ross, hopefully, will make him and all of us, look better as a punt returner. You know, Devin Thomas is a reckless kick returner. I mean, that guy is fearless.
Drops his shoulder into well, – yeah. He's a maniac.
And, the coverage teams have been good. So I think Tom Quinn is a little unfairly maligned, frankly.
But the tackles did do a great job. You mentioned that. Trent Crowell was kept quiet. The one sack he got, I didn't even think he got it on Will Beatty, to be honest with you. And Badman got controlled by Kareem McKenzie for most of the game.
Yeah, I was frankly worried about the Beatty Call matchup.
So was
Beatty,
I.
Beatty really handled him.
He did, no question. 201-939-4513. Stay on the phones. Let's go to Mike in Union, New Jersey. What's up, Mike?
How you doing?
What's
I'm
up?
Mike from Union, New Jersey.
Yep.
I just wanted to know, first of all, I want to congratulate the Giants on a good win. I wanted to know, do you think they should stick with more with the running game since it worked last week, or just open it up a little bit more with the passing game since Manningham should be back and, Eli was able to get better throws in?
Well, I'm always an advocate of running the ball when you have Jacobs and Bradshaw, but I think one of the things about the passing game, which we saw last week, everyone was so worried when Steve Smith left, and Steve Smith did a great job here, but, you plug in Victor Cruz, and then when you get Mario back and Adam with Knicks, you got three guys who can go down the field and really, probably open things up a little more. So I think over time, once Mario gets healthy, I think you're going to see the Giants go downfield more in the passing game.
Awesome. Can I have one more question?
Sure. What's up?
About Hakeem Nicks. I mean, honestly, Hakeem Nicks to me is one of the premier receivers in the NFL. And I feel as though, the last two games, they haven't been going to him as much. What do you think about that? Because in the first game, he had a great game. In the second game, his playing kind of went down. And this game, I think he had about three catches or four catches.
Well, after he had a great game in the first game, then the last two teams paid a lot more attention to him and covered him. And let me ask you something. If you're the Philadelphia Eagles and you're going into last week's game, and you have Hakeem Nicks on one side and Victor Cruz on the other, who are you going to concentrate on?
Yeah, Hakeem Nicks.
Yeah, no question. And thanks for the call, man. It's really that simple. we were talking about that heading into the game, and the Eagles were going to man up whomever was lining up outside on the other end of Hakeem Nicks, and they were going to say, beat us. And guess what? Victor Cruz beat him.
Yeah. And, it, yeah, I mean, beat him badly.
Beat him badly.
Two
and Mike,
big plays.
Let's go to the offense and start with that first Victor Cruz play. Obviously, it was a blitz read by Manning through a nice little out route there, and then Victor Cruz just made a couple guys miss and just made a play. It looked like the Three Stooges, the two Eagles guys kind of running into each other and falling down.
Well, I mean, even before that, though, John, I mean, Kirk Coleman hit him high. He had a
– yeah.
I mean, there's no excuse if you're Kirk Coleman for not to make that tackle. You hit him. Maybe should have gone down on his legs, but – I think Victor Cruz showed some strength there. He just basically, Coleman just bounced off him, and then the two players collided, and he got a nice block from Hakeem at the end.
And it's funny, the first half of that game, Manning had Victor Cruz on a deep pass, and looked like maybe halfway through that route, Victor Cruz turned the afterburners down a little bit, wasn't going quite top speed. Eli overthrows him by about 3 or 4 inches. I mean, it was right there, but wow, Cruz made up for it, huh?
Well, yeah, and he'll learn from that play. You got to keep going, and... I think everyone who saw the game's got to be excited about Victor Cruz. And then when you think when he gets back, when he's there, Manningham's back, I mean, the Giants, as I just said, can have three potential downfield threats.
And then his big
I think Nicks is your possession receiver in that group.
I know. And then and then on the play on the left sideline where really Manning just said, all right, Victor, I'm going to trust you. I'm just going to, frankly, chuck it up there.
Yep.
It's Cruz on two guys, and he goes up and he beats, you know, Asamoah, who is a great corner, yeah, but even more important, he's a big corner, he's a strong corner, and he outworked him for the football.
Yeah, he made it just a tremendous play, again, showing great strength and resolve and confidence. And, you know, he said, he even said when he was running down, he said, oh, there's no way Eli's going to throw this ball. I got two guys on me. He looked up, and he said, oh. So then he said, I'm either going to catch it, or I'm going to make sure nobody else catches it, and he caught it.
No question. That was one of the big turning points of the game, as well as that big fourth down defensive stand. 201-939-4513. Chris is down in Alabama. What's up, Chris?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey,
good morning.
Chris.
What's up, Chris?
I was just wondering what you guys, what's your view on Vic's crying on the post.
I thought, first of all, I did not think that the Giants did anything outside of the rules. You know, the canty hit he led with his shoulder, I thought, and, you know, should not have been penalized.
Their face mask kind of brushed, but that's it.
And he was not penalized. You know, when Michael Vick gets hit a lot, when he puts the ball down and starts running, and when he can do that, you're not a quarterback anymore. You're a running back, and you're fair game, and he's going to get hit. That's what happens. If you want to venture outside the pocket as he does, you're going to get hit. And I think a lot of what he did after the game, he's really just trying to plant the seed for the officials for future games.
Okay. And don't you think that it's more likely due to his offensive line and just the way that he plays ball? I mean, I'm sure the referees have to look at him as more of a running back / quarterback than just a regular quarterback. So, in my opinion, I think, you know, they have to look at it that way. But a lot of blame has to go to his line. I mean, the line protects him, correct?
Yeah, you're right. And the Eagles' offensive line is really one of their weaknesses, Mike. And thank you very much for the call. Especially inside. Their tackles are both pretty good players, Harrimans and Peters, but they've been mixing and matching inside. Kelsey, the rookie center, they brought in Devan right after the 53-man roster cuts, and they better get that interior of that line squared away. Or, you know, Michael Vick seems to have dodged, well, for their sakes, Michael Vick seems to have dodged a bullet here. He doesn't have a fractured or broken hand, and it looks like he's day-to-day now, but he's going to get a lot worse than a broken hand if he keeps getting pounded the way he's getting pounded.
That's always been his game, though, John. That's what he does. He goes outside the pocket to either buy time before he passes or to take off. And, you know, like I said, he's fair game if he's going to do that. He's not a quarterback in the pocket. He's not deserving of special protection.
I really didn't think Andy Reid called a very good game, Mike. I got to be honest with you. I thought it was a bad decision to go for it on, you know, 4th and 3 and on the 40. The Giants' offense had really been stalled for the better part of two quarters. I figure you pin them there and you let your defense go to work. And then on the goal line stand, you have the two quickest or fastest guys in the game in McCoy and Vic, and you don't give either guy a chance. McCoy doesn't even touch the ball, first of all. You give it to Owen Schmidt. I don't know what you're thinking there. And you don't even give Vic a chance to use athleticism outside. You don't roll him out of bootleg or play action. You just run him into the line, and the interior line's your weakness. I didn't get that play calling at all.
No, I didn't either. If I was an Eagles fan, I'd probably be upset about it. You know, you're down that close. I would certainly would expect LeSean McCoy to get the ball. I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah, no question. Down to Virginia. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks, Mike.
And we talked last week. Glad to see the Giants actually executed. I wanted to comment on the caller who just two calls ago about you guys if the Giants should pass more. And I absolutely think that we need to run the ball more. And if you look at the Washington Redskins game, you know, we had a good, you know, balance of running and passing in the first half, and then we ran the ball 9 times, you know, in the second half, and we lost control of the game. And I think we're probably one of the few teams that can put two guys out there that can potentially average 5 yards a carry. You know, and then, you know, Eli could just go off the play action pass, or, you know, teams are going to start putting 8 men in the box so that we can actually get downfield. Because I think sometimes with Eli is, you know, you want to keep him around 25 throws, because sometimes if he's got to throw the ball 30, 35 times a game, he kind of forces in a pass sometimes, and that's where we get turnovers. So, you know, I think this team is the strength since I've watched the Giants, from Joe Morris to Otis Anderson to Rodney Hampton, has been the running game. And I just wanted your guys' thoughts.
I think the Giants have, really in today's NFL, what is almost an unusual weapon in this pass-happy era. You know, they have these two great backs in Jacobs and Bradshaw, and I think it would be to the Giants' advantage to use them as often as possible, just, you know, to control the clock, to wear down defenses, and to help open up the passing game for Eli.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it looked like the offensive line, you know, during last week, I mean, we didn't get, you know, we had a couple of big runs, but even, you know, even when there wasn't much there, we were at least able to get like 2-3 yards. And you know, I think that really helped us having manageable third downs, because in the first two games we were, you know, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 8. And against the Eagles we were, you know, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 4. And I think that was just kind of, the running game, you know, being effective enough to get us closer, you know, so.
All right, Mike, we appreciate the call, man. We agree.
Thank you.
Great. And I think you saw the running game really kind of hit their stride more than we've seen them hit the stride so far this season, Mike.
Yeah, I think that happens as the season goes on, John. You get comfortable. You just see what works. The line gets in a groove. The backs get in a bit of groove running. So I would look for the running game to continue to develop and improve.
Back to the phones. Craig is down in Orlando, Florida. Craig, what's up?
Hey, I was just wondering, is it possible – is it even feasible if the Giants would look into possibly signing Randy Moss or reaching out to him at least? One being that the receivers are so banged up. Manningham was out with a concussion. I mean, it would be a good fit. I don't know if that would be something that Eli...
I disagree. He would not be... Randy Moss would not be a good fit in this locker room, really, and with this coach. And I don't see that happening at all.
No?
No.
All right. Just an option, I was thinking.
No, I hear you, man. Appreciate the call. Michael, you made him so sad. He was all excited. You said no, and he's like, oh.
I just don't see. You know, first of all, Mario's going to hopefully be back this week. And as we said with Mario and Victor Cruz and, even Stokely is an option. You know, it's not a group of stars at wide receiver, but it can be a productive crew. And I think we're seeing now everyone was so worried about the loss of Steve Smith, who was a great player here. But I think the Giants are going to be able to make up for that. They have different candidates to play inside. And as we've mentioned a couple times already, they, you know, may be more of a downfield threat now.
Very briefly before we let you go, Mike, I want to touch on the Arizona Cardinals moving forward here. They're the Giants' opponent in a few days. Obviously, the first thing you think about when you think about Arizona is Larry Fitzgerald and their passing game, Kevin Cobb, obviously their new quarterback. What are your thoughts heading into this game against the Cardinals?
Well, I just think that the Giants really better be ready, because I think they're going to run into a very angry Cardinals team. They've lost their last two games by a total of 4 points. They could easily be 3-0 right now. And, this is they're not home much early in the year, and I'm sure the Cardinals are looking at it as they've really got to take advantage of this game. And, Larry Fitzgerald, as you mentioned, could very well be the best receiver in football. The Giants are going to have to, you know, figure out a way to limit his limit the damage that he can do. So, but I just think the Giants, you know, everyone thinks, well, the Cardinals, you know, the Cardinals obviously traditionally are not a good team. I just think the Giants are going to go into a really difficult atmosphere on Sunday.
And in Arizona is always a tough place to play. What do you think of Kevin Cobb and the progress he's made as a quarterback?
You know, I think Kevin Cobb still does not really have that much experience.
Right.
He's still a young, you know, he's been in the league for a few years, but he really hasn't played that much. And I'd like to think that Perry Fuel can design some things, maybe rattle him or confuse him a little bit and get him out of his game. You know, Kevin Cobb's got a live arm, a big arm, but he's still, you know, almost a rookie in terms of playing experience, and you would hope the Giants could take advantage of that.
Now, defensively, the Cardinals have had their problems. Their strength appears to be in the secondary. They have two safeties with pretty big names, Kerry Rhodes and Adrian Wilson, but both guys are probably past their prime. They've had their best years are probably behind them. And, of course, Patrick Peterson, their first-round draft pick, who everyone says is going to be a dynamic cornerback, already has an interception this year. I'm not sure if it was a kick return or punt return for a touchdown, but he definitely has a return touchdown in the kicking game. The Giants, though, should be able to run the ball, Mike. Their front seven isn't exactly filled with world beaters.
No, I mean, they're giving up almost 400 yards a game. That's a lot. I'm looking here, 122 rushing yards a game. You know, I think their linebackers are not particularly terrific, for lack of a better word. So you would think the Giants should be able to, you know, control the ball and do what they want on offense, but, you know, follow their game plan and, you know, put some points on the board.
Did you watch the NFC East battle last night, by the way?
I did watch the NFC East battle.
Your thoughts on that?
Man, I'm stunned with as many mistakes as the Cowboys won. I've never seen a team have so much trouble snapping the ball.
Oh, man. Romo looked like he was going to take that center and strangle him. Phil Costa, wow. Yeah,
but to have all those mistakes and breakdowns and not score a touchdown and still win the game, you know, you got to hand it to the Cowboys. They really overcame a lot of adversity to win that game.
And one of the issues they've had the last few years is a kicker. I mean, they've had some bad kickers in Dallas. And yeah. Dan Bailey now, two straight weeks, he's been a godsend for him.
Yeah, he's really come up big. And, you know, you look now, obviously it's still very early in the year, but you have three teams there at 2-1 in the NFC East, and you just got to think it's going to be a tremendous race for a long time. And, you know, now the Giants do not play an NFC East opponent in their next six games. It's all NFC West and AFC East. So they got to take advantage of this and keep pace.
Which team's not tied for first place in the NFC East again?
Oh, that would be the Philadelphia Eagles.
That's right. Mike, we appreciate it as always. Thanks a lot for the time today. And we'll catch up with Mike throughout the week. And, of course, you can read all of his great stuff on Giants.com throughout the rest of the week. Mike, we will catch up with you very, very soon. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. John Schmelk will take you the rest of the way. Paul Dottino's going to join us in about 10 minutes to wrap up the show. We'll probably wrap up a little bit early today. We got some stuff going on I got to take care of upstairs. But thanks for calling, everybody. And, of course, we will take your questions for Paul at #GiantsChat. But for now, oh, boy, I always regret this. We're going to bring in Dave Melroy here for our little fantasy update. He likes to brag about the guys that he correctly predicted would have big fantasy weekends.
Victor Cruz.
On these Tuesday mornings. That was loud.
Sorry.
And but I like to make fun of him for his misses. But, all right, Melroy, let's take a quick look back here over what you would think constitutes big fantasy football news in week number three and what people should be doing going forward.
Well, going forward, with a lot of the guys we talked about, we've actually hit pretty well. Let's actually just talk about that quickly.
Sure.
I successfully told you to pick up Victor Cruz this week.
That worked out pretty well.
Pretty happy about
that.
Yeah,
he had a great week, no question.
Daniel Thomas was another guy who had a really big week that we talked about. As far as the locks, we told you Maurice Jones-Drew, and we told you Rob Gronkowski. Very happy about that.
Especially with Aaron Hernandez out. Rob Gronkowski will get the bulk of the receptions going forward. I had the misfortune of starting Deion Branch in one of my leagues this week.
Yeah.
After having two monster weeks, he had zero catches.
Yeah, it's pretty much the Gronkowski and Wes Welker show in Indianapolis.
Well, right, it was this week, yeah, at least.
Yeah. I want to start off posing a question to you, John.
Sure, what do you got?
I'm going to name a couple guys. I want you to tell me what two things these guys have in common.
All right.
Jason Campbell, Jay Cutler, Matt Hasselbeck, Mark Sanchez, Chad Henne, Kevin Cobb, and Cam Newton. What do they have in common, John?
They're all quarterbacks.
Yeah, a little too easy.
Nah, I had to take the easy one. All right, I'm just doing this by all of them. Some of them were on the same team last year and this year. They all threw interceptions last week.
No.
Are you sure they didn't all throw interceptions last week?
They might have.
Come on. Give me that one.
All right. The answer is they're basically all undrafted, and they're all currently doing better than Michael Vick in fantasy football.
Oh, that's not bad, actually. Yeah. Though, right? It's pretty good.
All right. Just two guys I want to touch on. We already talked about Wes Welker. Check this out. This guy had 20 targets last week.
I know.
16 receptions, 217 yards, 2 touchdowns in a loss to Buffalo. This guy is a monster going forward. He almost doubles the next wide receiver behind him. Ridiculous. If you can trade for this guy, I mean, besides giving up Andre Johnson, Adrian Peterson, someone absurd like that, if you can, you know, package a deal to get Wes Welker from someone, do it.
So you actually want to buy high on him. Because right now, I mean, you have to, if you're buying, you're buying high.
Yeah, you are. And if you...
People like you, the reason we had a housing bubble, you realize that, right?
Yeah, I apologize, America. Another guy I want to talk about is Julio Jones. Had 115 yards, no touchdowns. Didn't, like, you know, pop on anyone's fantasy radar. But this guy was shadowed by Aqib Talib, who's almost a consensus top 10 cornerback in the league. To put up those types of numbers against a cornerback like that, I think going forward, he's just going to become more integral to that passing attack in Atlanta. Pick him up, buy low, buy high, just buy him.
And he made a big play down the field, too, yes. And that's why the Falcons drafted him. They wanted a big play threat, and he did show that against Tampa this past week.
Yeah, so just buy high on that one. Some of the guys we missed on, because I'm not, you know, I get things wrong. I'm human. I told you to get Kellen Winslow this week. Yeah, he had, like, 20 yards. That was bad. And then another guy I totally missed on was Jordy Nelson. Good logic. I liked that he was going to go for the tall vertical guy. Unfortunately, his name was JerMichael Finley.
Well, and that's what we talked about last week. It's hard to start unless Greg Jennings, who's obviously an every week starter, talking about those, you know, second, third, and fourth Packer wide receivers. It's hard to figure out who Aaron Rodgers is going to target on a weekly basis. There are too many guys.
Too many guys. I mean, yeah, one week it's Greg Jennings, one week it's Randall Cobb. I mean, when is Jason Jones going to make his play? I mean,
exactly.
Maybe he'll be the sleeper this week just so he can get a little touches or a few touches. And then just some of the guys we've talked about, Javid Best having a really good quiet year. He's really doing his damage in the passing game like we talked about because Matt Stafford, who is currently the third-ranked fantasy football quarterback, is really using him as a check down option, as well as Brandon Pettigrew. He could be making a jump onto the tight end scene pretty quickly.
That's assuming he doesn't throw it to Calvin Johnson every single time, which frankly is not that bad of an idea.
Yeah, honestly, when you got Megatron, you might as well just keep throwing it.
How about that throw that Stafford made to him off the back foot, fading backwards, a perfect on the money, in stride, fade pattern down that left sideline at the end of that game to beat Minnesota.
Awesome. And it was the only person who could have caught that ball was Calvin Johnson, and it was he's ridiculous.
If Stafford could stay healthy, man, yep, he is going to be a very good quarterback for a long time.
Can you
time.
Imagine when we get to December if the Lions and the Packers are actually fighting each other for the playoffs? That's going to be kind of awesome to watch.
Oh, it's going to be awesome, no question, and it's going to be a good matchup next week. Giant fans should pay attention to this. I believe they play at 1 o'clock. The Giants are at 4, obviously, being in Arizona.
Yeah.
The Lions take on the Cowboys in 1, and that'll be a very interesting
Ooh.
Test for both teams. The Cowboys have a banged-up secondary, though Terrence Newman did come back this week.
Yeah.
Jenkins is still battling that shoulder. We'll see how they handle what has been a very, very explosive Lions offense.
Yeah, I think the Lions might help the Giants out this week.
They could, no question.
Win.
It is in Dallas. The Lions have had trouble on the road, historically, away from Detroit.
Another guy I just want to touch on really quickly, and he's very weird to start because he's not conventional at anything, but is Darren Sproles. Have you seen some of his highlights this year?
Melroy, I got to be honest with you. He's sitting on my bench right now, and I haven't used him yet this year.
Well, I understand that.
He's sitting behind Frank Gore, and he's sitting behind Maurice Jones-Drew. How am I going to bench one of those two guys? But you look down, and every week, Darren Sproles is 22 points.
And he's making, like, big plays in the punt return game. He's making a big catch. He's, you know, catching a screen pass that he's taking for 50 yards. This guy, I mean, we knew this in the playoffs, whenever it was, 2009 when he was with San Diego and he blew it up. Just a freaking football player he is.
No question. What else you got for me, Melroy?
Let's talk about Tim Hightower a little bit, going back to Monday night game. Kind of concerned with Tim Hightower. He's a bruiser, but he's not, I don't know if it's Washington's offensive line that's not creating the holes for him.
He's a good pass receiver.
And I think he's going to lose touches to Roy Helu. I think he showed that speed and quickness that Mike Shanahan might want to use a little bit going forward, and I think Tim Hightower might be fading a little bit.
Any big injuries this week? So that should, guys, that should be hot on the waiver wire?
Because
tonight I'm going to leave work, and I'm going to rely on Melroy to tell me who to try to pick up on the waiver wire with all these injuries.
Well, if we're staying on the Giants, Arizona, Beanie Wells is rumored to be coming back, but he's got this backup, and I'm trying to remember his name. It's Antonio Smith.
Yeah, Antonio Smith is the backup. That's correct.
I think that guy's going to be pretty good. I'm not sure. Check on Beanie Wells' status, and I wouldn't, you know, Giants defense is impenetrable, so don't start anybody going against
that. That is a big endorsement. Who's that guy that's his backup? That guy, Antonio, what's his name? Yeah, you should pick him up. All right, Melroy.
Yeah,
I'm going to run to the computer now.
That's funny, Jack.
Anybody else?
One guy I do like, let's go Saints. Saints play the Jaguars this week, who are pretty much a joke when it comes to passing defense. I like Robert Meacham. I think he's going to establish himself as one of the top targets. I think Marcus Colston's knee is not done, but he's wavering in the Saints depth chart. Lance Moore's good. Devery Henderson's good. But I think a consistent threat will be Robert Meacham, so pick him up if you can.
You got anything else, Melroy, or can I say goodbye?
Nah, let's say goodbye.
You're done. All right, Melroy, great job as always on the fantasy stuff. He's with us on Tuesdays and Fridays, and, of course, he's screening your calls every day here on Giants.com, getting your calls up on the air. We're going to have Paul Dottino join us in just 1 second here on Giants.com, but we're also taking your calls at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, and also your questions on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. Giants, of course, coming off their big win against the Philadelphia Eagles. They won that game, of course, 29-16. Great offense, great defense, and really, I was a big fan of what you guys did on Twitter and on the phones yesterday, giving some credit to the Giants coordinators. I didn't have a chance to talk to Mike about it, but I thought Perry Fuel and Kevin Gilbride really had very, very good games calling the Giants plays. On defense, Perry Fuel made up for the fact that the Giants were banged up in the secondary. They played that zone defense, and they played it well. The linebackers did a good job. I thought it was just an excellent job by Perry Fuel putting his players in a position to succeed, especially not allowing the big play in that secondary. They made the Eagles sustain long drives, run the ball at Shady McCoy, and he's really good, don't get me wrong, but you don't want to let the Eagles get big plays, and that's what the Giants did. Offensively with Kevin Gilbride, I thought the Giants did an excellent job not putting Eli Manning in a position to make mistakes. And that, I thought, was key for the Giants offensively with Eli Manning. They put Eli Manning out of third and longs. They kept him in third and short. They ran the football on first and second down, and they got the job done. And that's one thing that you guys haven't really said a lot, and it's a simple fact of football, and it's really boring to talk about because it's always a key to the game. But you can't turn the ball over, especially against a very good offense like the Philadelphia Eagles. You cannot turn the football over and give them a short field. It's just something you can't do. And the Giants did an excellent, excellent job on offense this week, not turning the ball over. And really, it's been something they've been good at the first 3 weeks. You've only had one turnover each of the first couple games. And if that's your average over the course of the year, you're going to be fine. You're going to have a good season here with the New York Giants offensively. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Johnny Schmelk with you right here on Giants.com. Paul Dottino from WFAN, of course, a contributor to Giants.com, will join us just a second right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And, of course, you can send in your questions to Paul and myself on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. And, of course, remember to follow the Giants on Twitter at Giants and become a fan of theirs on Facebook at facebook.com/NewYorkGiants. And joining us on the phone right now is Paul Dottino, beat reporter for WFAN, of course, a contributor to Giants.com. He lives it, he breathes it, he's watched the game tape. I want to get his take. He will be on, of course, Big Blue Kickoff Live, co-hosting with Ina Marks tomorrow morning. We'll call Paul for about 5-10 minutes here, and then we'll say goodbye. Paulie Dots, how you doing?
Hey, good morning, John. You know, it's kind of funny how just the little things sometimes can make all the difference in the world, and the Giants did so many little things right the other day that it's a much brighter and sunnier day at the Meadowlands, isn't it?
No question. I just mentioned it. I want you to kind of talk about it a little more. I had the joy of sharing a car ride back home with Paul Dottino on Sunday, and he raved for about 35 straight minutes on the, as I'll quote Paul here, the Rubik's Cube that is Perry Field's defensive strategy and how he rotated guys in and out of the game. Tell me, Paul, what did Perry Field do that impressed you so much?
Well, you know, John, we all realize that Perry Fuel likes to use multiple schemes and multiple blitz packages. And, you know, as you've said to me so many times before, you know, against a team like the Eagles, you still got to always keep somebody back. You're going to have to play some type of zone. You're going to have to make sure that you have some safety help. And I agree. There's no doubt about that. The Giants didn't play a lot of pressing man-to-man like maybe would have been a gamble if you're going to be a heavy blitz. But what they did do was, and some of it was out of necessity because the defense was on the field for over 20 minutes in the first half against Philly, they rotated guys in and out. And they did it so often. For instance, Jaquan Williams played the majority of the plays as a nickel linebacker, and Greg Jones barely got on the field. Now, that's something I'm sure that the Philadelphia Eagles did not expect. You know, I am sure they did not expect to see Kennedy playing a whole bunch of defensive tackle, especially in short yardage situations. You know, these are the kinds of things. Rocky Bernard was in for a very healthy amount of plays and in situations where you would not usually see him. And he was productive, you know, about the big short yardage stop that he helped make. So I believe what happened was, and whether or not it was by design or because that the defense was on the field so long, he just wanted to get the fresh bodies in, I'm going to think it was probably more by design because the number of guys he sent on certain plays and the way he mixed up the number of guys he would send and then the different personnel groupings that were on the field at different times, to me, confused Michael Vick. And I'm not going to go off of that because I think that's what happened, John. And I think a number of the Giants defenders, even yesterday, Matthias Kiwanuka reiterated, we used so many different personnel combinations that it looked like the Eagles weren't sure what we were doing. And I got to give Perry Fuel credit for that.
And you also got to give credit to Perry Fuel and his defense of roughing up Michael Vick. And it looks like the Eagles dodged a bit of a bullet here. He doesn't have a fractured hand. He's now day-to-day. But even with that hand, Paul, part of me was thinking the Eagles might be better off almost giving Vic a couple weeks off to kind of gather himself here because right now he looks absolutely rattled back there. And he doesn't look like the quarterback that played against the Giants last year. He looks like the quarterback that played terribly in the playoffs in the last couple weeks of the regular season. He doesn't look right.
Well, you know, John, I thought that the Giants did a pretty good job on him last year until that game at what is now MetLife Stadium when he scrambled several times in the fourth quarter and helped them come back.
Right.
In terms of what they did to defend him passing-wise was very good last year. I think Perry Fuel showed people, you know, get after him, hit him a lot, make him roll to his right. That's going to make him a much less efficient passer. Now, the problem then is, what do you do about his legs? Well, it's very simple. You got to not only contain him from the outside, but then you got to get that push from the front of the pocket. Because the second he sees an open lane in front of the pocket, he steps up and he takes off for 30 yards. That's what he did in the, quote, the Sean Jackson game. His scrambles in the fourth quarter were more dangerous in that game and more deadly than Deshaun Jackson's punt return. Because without Vic's scrambles, the Deshaun Jackson punt return never happens. So on Sunday, I mean, think about it, John. You were there. Think about it. How many times did Vic step up into the pocket and have a clear lane to just take off with the ball? Not too many times at all.
No, he never did. And that's why, Paul, you got to give credit to two guys that haven't gotten credit, I think, Linval Joseph and Chris Canty, who really did a great job at tackle.
And Bernard and Kennedy.
Yep.
Those guys had a part of it, too. And I think that, and here's the other thing. Jaquan Williams, with his speed, you know, when they drafted him, they knew he was fast, but they didn't know how quickly he'd be able to take on a big chunk of this defense. John, I thought it was brilliant to get him on the field as much as he was because he's big enough and strong enough that he can be a force in the running game, but he's also faster than probably a lot of safeties in this league and certainly maybe even faster than Deion Grant at Deion Grant's rather up there in age. So you look at what Jaquan Williams did and how many times, John, you know, I got to go back and look at my notes, but
several times, Williams was able to track down McCoy with his pure speed. And that's something the Giants haven't had since the days of Jesse Armstead. And then I also noticed the number of times when Vic did start to get rattled or pressured in the pocket, and you could see he wanted to go somewhere. And because the DTs were doing such a good job in between the hash marks, Vic wanted to go to the outside. But when he went to the outside, guess who? Jaquan Williams was there, maybe 5 or 6 yards downfield, shadowing him, following him over to the outside. And Vic was like, uh-oh, now I got to throw it. What happens? Incomplete pass. The Giant D holds. I really thought that giving Jaquan Williams a healthy portion of snaps on Sunday was another of Perry Fuel's brilliant moves, because his speed made a huge difference.
And let's give, let's give credit to Michael Boley as well, who really, I think, yeah, Paul, has probably played his best three consecutive games as a member of the Giants.
You could not be more right, John. Michael Boley, when he came here, I'm going to evoke that word, that name again, Jesse Armstead. There were people who told me they thought he could be a Jesse Armstead type for the Giants. Well, he got here. A lot of injury problems, and basically I think you could say disappointment is a pretty fair term for the first 2 years of Michael Boley's Giants tenure. But he's healthy. He looks good. He may not be exactly as quick as he was a few years ago. You know, may have lost a quarter of a step, let's say. But he's flying around. He's getting to the ball. He's avoiding traffic and not getting caught in the wash there in the laundry as he's able to make plays. And we've seen him now recover a fumble in each of the first two games and then obviously come up with a huge short yardage stop the other day and really should have had an interception that allowed to go through his hands. Michael Boley right now is having an impact on this defense.
Paul, before we say goodbye, I at least should get your take on the Giants' offense here. You've rewatched the game. Anything strike you as to what the Giants did so well offensively?
Well, you know, John, there was one thing, and it really took me a second look at the tape to really determine this, because at the time, you know, they did run the ball fairly effectively, but again, not as well as they want to. What I thought is that, for the most part, that O-line could take another step forward, and we've talked about how they will need time to gel. They did not look very good against the Redskins. They looked a little bit against St. Louis. Well, you know what, John? They took another baby step forward against Philadelphia. It was quite clear that these guys are starting to get on the same page. And, is it there yet? No. They still are a work in progress. But I saw much fewer mental mistakes and blocking assignment mistakes on this tape than I did the first 2 weeks. So it's coming together. They're getting better. Now, the only thing they need to do is to continue to go on that upswing to the point where they actually get it down pat.
All right, Paulie, have fun with Anita tomorrow morning.
All right, you got it, John.
Paul Dottino on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. He will be co-hosting with Anita Marks tomorrow morning starting at 9:30 right here on Giants.com. Make sure you stop by, tune in, give us a call, and give them a call, 201-939-4513, or send your question to hashtag GiantsChat. Our final call of the show. Let's go to Martin down in D.C. What's up, Martin?
Hey, John. How you doing today?
What's up?
Hey, what's going on? Listen, two quick comments I wanted to make. The first one is Fuel. Fuel has been having excellent schemes.
Yeah, he's been great, Martin. What else you got?
And also, Gilbride needs to think more outside of the box as far as the calls are coming. Some of the calls that we played on against Philly were excellent. We need some more of that. And my question is, what's going to happen with OC when he comes back? Will he move JPP out, or what's going to go on with that, do you think?
I think you'll see a very healthy rotation between all the defensive linemen, Martin, to be honest with you. When OC first gets back, he's not going to be able to play all the snaps anyway. So you're going to see Pierre-Paul still out there for 40 snaps at end. And I think in passing situations, you'll see him move into tackle. So I don't think you'll be seeing much less of JPP. You might just be seeing him in different spots and in different situations.
Right, because he's been having an awesome season so far. Awesome.
He's been fantastic in every aspect, Martin. We appreciate the call, man.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, John.
All right, everybody. Great job on the phones today. Great job on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. In the next hour or so, I'll try to respond to you guys online, even those you guys that I mentioned on the show as well. Of course, Big Blue hits every weekday morning right here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live every weekday morning right here on Giants.com from 9:30 to 10:30. Nina Marks and Paul Dottino have you tomorrow. Remember, follow the Giants on Twitter at Giants and be a fan of theirs on Facebook at Facebook.com/New York Giants. And, of course, don't forget to download the Giants' brand-new mobile app at iTunes, your Android Marketplace, or, of course, your BlackBerry App World. Check it out. All the Giants videos, multimedia, Mike Eisen stories, you name it, it's there. And sometime soon you'll be able to hear this show on the mobile app as well. At least that's the hope and the goal. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Giants.com.